Hello again, this is Charlie Bellefontaine, and you're listening to the Home Buyers Hour on WCPT AM 820, where the facts matter. Today we're going to start talking about, obviously real estate.
What were we going to start talking about? I think we were going to talk about, we're going to get a market update from our from our Joey replacement. I know that.
We are, and then we're also going to be talking about home inspectors giving prices. I got into a little quarrel on the Book of Face with another home inspector about doing stuff like that, and Joey just mentioned earlier that there were some issues with doing stuff, and it's mostly about education. So, without further ado, I want to introduce the people on the show today, Patrick Loftus of Loftus Law and Joey Olson, who is replacing Joey Matthews today. And he's part of the Frontline Team, I believe it's called, right? Frontline Team at Neighborhood Loans. And, you know, Joey, I'm going to get to you in a second. Patrick, if you don't mind, give us the rundown of how do people get a hold of you.
Hey, the rundown. Good morning. And I'm here to give you the rundown of how people get a hold of me.
He's making fun of me, and I'm a boomer. So any boomers that are listening, please leave a one-star review for Patrick Loftus.
And any boomers that are listening, go ahead on Charlie's Facebook page and start a political argument with him. He loves that.
No,
absolutely
he doesn't.
Loves it. He wants to talk all the politics, all the hot takes, the most controversial thing you can find, post it on Facebook and tag Charlie Bellefontaine. He loves that. If you want to find me, I'm on Facebook because everyone, you know, you got to be whatever. It was it used to be a place to go to that wasn't a toxic cesspool. But you can find me on Instagram, which is totally different. Loftus_law. Find me on TikTok, which is the most wholesome place online, at Loftus Law.
Until it's gone. I got you there.
Next week.
Joey, if you don't mind, give us a rundown on you, and then I want to hear what you found out about Mr. Powell.
Okay. I'm Joey Olson. I'm the good-looking Joey on the team.
That is true.
Pretty much just call me if you need me. 708-969-0827.
One more time, a little bit slower.
708-969-0827.
Sounds good. So what happened?
Jerome Powell spoke the other day, and, you know, everyone kind of hangs on his words lately. The gist of it is inflation's been kind of sticky to begin this year here.
What does that mean, sticky?
They're not seeing the improvement they want. They saw last year we had a lot of improvement, and I'm just kind of echoing what Jerome Powell said.
Yeah, but also tell me, what is improvement? What are we looking for?
So they have a 2% goal, to get inflation down to it. They've moved in that direction last year. Within the last couple months, they haven't seen the improvement they want to see. So the good thing is, because I heard some rumblings about a rate increase, like through the media, in the last couple of weeks, they said their restrictive policy they have in place, they're confident to get where they want to be, but it's going to stay in place a little longer.
Okay.
But we still have an opportunity for a rate decrease. I think it's like a 69% chance in September.
But if the inflation's going up high, isn't it something where they're going to want to put the brakes on it and raise the rates?
The way Jerome explained it was their restrictive policy they have in place right now, they're confident to keep it in check. They can keep that in place as long as they need to. And then pretty much what he said was, if there's a weakening in the labor market, they can easily ease it. So that's paraphrasing, but that was the message I got out of what the chairman said.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep in mind that when you're talking about changing the interest rate, it's not something that you change the interest rate and boom, something happens right away. It's really something that is going to take effect 6 to 9 months, maybe even longer afterward, maybe up to like 18 months. So, we look at it as what's happening today, but, changing those interest rates, it's meant to either stimulate more money into the economy or to have the opposite effect. You reduce interest rates, you're trying to stimulate money into the economy by making it more favorable for borrowers. And conversely, if you raise interest rates, you make it less favorable for people to borrow, and so less borrowing takes place. And that's the monetary policy that's meant to ease inflation or stimulate the economy.
Yeah, it was mentioned that, they're glad they didn't react at the end of last year when we were seeing the improvement, you know, initially. So pretty much going to ride this out throughout the summer is what it sounds like.
So is that June rate decrease out the one that they were predicting, you know, not so long ago?
I mean, I can't say for sure, but to me, I would believe so.
You know? All right, you heard it here first. Joey Olson says that we are not getting that rate decrease in June. Take it to the bank. And, you know, there's really no two ways about it. That's how it's going to happen.
I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless right here, which is awesome. Thank you. You know, sometimes it's not worth repeating into that stuff.
I'm a betting man, so I would take that bet.
Yeah,
I gotcha. I want to throw a plug out there right away for BNI. And something that Patrick and I, we belong to, you know, is BNI, and we're always looking for other people that want to get involved with this. So if you're listening and you own a small business and you want to start, or you have been getting into networking and you want to start joining a group, please reach out to me. My cell phone, not too often do I give this one.
Oh, Lordy.
I know. You could drop a text. We'll see how many nasty texts I get. 630-327-2700. Repeating, 630-327-2700. If you want to come out and visit us and see what our networking group is about, we would love to have you. We don't care what your business is. If you can't fit in ours, we'll help you find another group.
Yeah, let me just chime in on that because I wanted to say my two cents about it, and because, you know, I'm a member as well, and I am also the president of the chapter. BNI, let me just highlight a couple of things. Number one, the whole point of the chapter is to make and receive referrals, right? So, you know, if you are an entrepreneur, you're someone who does business through referral, or, you know, at least in part through referral, this is an excellent, excellent way to, you know, basically increase your network by, we have 16 members right now. You will automatically have not only 16 new people to receive referrals from, but you will have 16 new people in your network to make referrals to. And you know, if you don't notice, if you're someone like me who's an entrepreneur, you tend to have a lot of people ask you, hey, do you know this? Do you know that? Do you know an accountant? Do you know financial planner? Do you know mortgage broker? Whatever it is, home inspector. And whenever I have an answer to that question that is yes, I'm stimulating the economy, right? I'm making a referral, I'm receiving a referral. And the other part of it is, and I think this goes underappreciated, is the education, teaching you exactly how to network. I didn't know the dance moves of networking until I actually did the training that they onboard you with. And I was just like, oh, wow. It was a light bulb that went off in my head. If you want to come visit us, we're Tuesday mornings at 11:30. The visit is free. You can come check us out if you like it. Talk more. If you don't like it, well, you know, we won't
That's
talk
it.
More.
Plug is done. So let me tell you a little story. I did an inspection, and this actually happened to be a 203K mortgage, and it was up in Deerfield, and they had a lot of structural movement in the foundation, and plus they had a partial crawl space that they wanted to turn that into a full-blown basement. I think there ended up being roughly about 30 piers that had to be installed, all right? Plus digging out the crawl space. So this 203K mortgage that I ended up monitoring and making sure everything worked okay was, you know, basically $100,000 was the cost to cure everything else. And, you know, when you start finding foundation problems and things like that, I, as a business owner, do like to find out how much is it going to cost to fix these things. And I've done a lot of work with that with the 203Ks, and plus there's a lot of cost estimating software to have it happen. But I think one of the biggest problems, and I'm going to ask Joey that you elaborate on this, one of the biggest problems in the home inspection profession is that we're uneducated as a whole, all right? And that we like to beat our chest, is what I call, and be that knight in shining armor, and pretend that we know more than what we do without actually learning the subject material. And don't get me wrong, I am all for helping the client and learn as much as you can. But if you don't know, just say you don't know. Now, can you share what just happened to you recently?
Yeah, I had a buyer that was getting an inspection done. And just kind of off the cuff, I believe, the inspector named a price for something he found without really much research on it. And it scared the buyer away, you know? So like I just told you guys earlier, like I'm all for, you know, backing out of something that's a bad deal.
Yeah.
You know, but what I'd like to see is, you know, like, let's do our research, get an actual cost to repair it, you know, before we kill a deal. So yeah, I mean, that just...
And you don't know how bad that foundation was, do you?
I don't personally know. Yeah. I saw the inspection report, but I couldn't really tell from the pictures. But the number stated was, you know, high. Yeah. It was enough to scare the buyer out.
So, and we were just, we had a couple of foundations that had some horizontal cracking and a little bit of bulging with that. And bulging means that it's being pushed in. Just like if you were bending your knee would move in. That would be considered a bulge in the foundation. And if that's happening, that's not good. I'm not here to tell you that it is, but there's solutions for everything. And when you start putting in carbon fiber straps or I-beams or tie backs, you know, you're still looking $1,000 to $2,000 per each one that you install. And usually you're going to have to start with two, all right? And then it's every 4 feet is when you put these things in there. So, I mean, you're talking about a big, long, you know, 15-foot caving in wall. If it's that bad, then I could see 30,000. But if it's only a corner that's settling, you know, it's good to know what the problem is and what runs into. And I know you have to deal with a lot of this stuff, Patrick. So, I mean, how does that fall on your end?
Yeah, well, I don't know that many people who, if presented with a $30,000 problem that they weren't aware of,
yeah.
I don't know that many people who would be like, yeah, you know, I'm good. I'm still moving forward.
Yeah.
You know,
they do exist, though. I will let you know that.
Well, sure. And, yeah. You know, that's all contextual, right? So if I'm buying a house and the price point is $1 million and all day long I think it's a $1.2 million house, am I going to live with a $30,000 problem? Absolutely, because the math works there. Likewise.
I'll tell you how those sentences always start off. My wife really wants this house.
So
we're going to blah, blah, blah.
Sure, sure. If it works within the confines of your finances and, you know, look, you know, what to spend. If you have $30,000 and you don't have anything to spend it on and you don't have anything to invest it in, that's, you get to decide what to do with that 30 grand. And if you want to, you know, if you and your wife, and, you know, let's be clear, those are joint family decisions, should be at least, then, you know, if she's like, hey, we should buy this house and we should spend the 30 grand to fix the foundation, you go, great, let's do it. I want to have the right place for my family. But, you know, if you're buying a $150,000 house and you find a $30,000 problem, that doesn't work unless that $150,000 house is worth, you know, $300,000 or whatever it is, you know, whatever math works for you. But, you know, by and large, that's kind of donezo when you get to that, when you get to that point. And, you know, I think the way I see it, when you get an inspector who wants to be the hero and they want to save someone from something, or they just want to look like the smartest person in the room, you know, that's a problem, because you can't. It's an error or a mistake to make it about you. Right. It's not about you. None of this is about us. None of us sitting in the room. It's about the buyer. It's about the client.
I wish that's all we could repeat over and over again. It's about the client.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, I'll be honest. I mean, it's not hard to get emotional in some of these situations. Man, I had a transaction that was supposed to close on Monday morning, and the buyer literally walked up to the front of the building where the closing was supposed to take place and decided, you know what, I don't want it. And walked right back to their car and started and drove off. And yeah, the look on your face is the one I had on my face, and the rest of us sitting in the closing room as the buyer's real estate broker walks in and says, yeah, they don't want it. And we're just like, are you kidding me?
What happens with that?
Well, we take the earnest money and I write a lengthy email about what a bad person the buyer is. But I, of course, use all, you know, legal language, and, you know, there's a lot of heretofores and whereases and accordinglies. And of course, at the end, I govern yourself accordingly, if the end all demand letters that way.
But again, it goes back to why at the 11th hour? You know, why aren't we seeing these problems when the agreement is made, the inspection, the attorney? Why at the absolute? Well, there's got to be a reason.
The answer is that the buyer, for whatever reason, I mean, in my opinion, they got bad advice and they had a bad team put together to advise them, because at the end of the day, you know, what the buyer's stated reasoning was more or less, well, you know, I'm intimidated by the fact that I've got to have the place painted and the floors sanded and refinished. And it's like, you know, that's like saying I'm afraid to go to bed because I have to brush my teeth and, you know, put on my pajamas. You know, it's part of life. It almost defies reason that someone would decide to do something. I mean, they're halfway to getting the place painted and the floors refinished if they don't give up the $1,000. So it's like, you know, if you kind of follow the breadcrumbs back to, you know, so the buyer's broker wasn't there with them at the final walkthrough. So the buyer's flying solo at that moment. And so a discussion that could have taken place during that final walkthrough to sort of say, yeah, you know what, there's some places where they removed paintings and of course the wall looks a little off because, you know, the sun and whatnot, it gets weathered and you're going to paint. And, you know, I've got the right painter for you, or, you know, let's decide on a strategy to sort that out going forward. And, you know, the agent also wasn't there with them at the inspection. And so you start to follow those breadcrumbs back. You know, the lawyer didn't even send an attorney review, an inspection letter. I mean, it's crazy. I never got a request to extend mortgage contingency, nothing. I don't even think I got a single letter from this buyer's lawyer. And yeah, you know, so you're following the breadcrumbs back and you go, okay, so this person got really shoddy advice and they made a really shoddy decision as a result.
Yeah, and I would get rid of the O's and replace them with I's. How often does that happen to you, Joey? Where, like, at the last minute, the deal gets killed like that? I mean, I'm way in the beginning, right after the contract signed, and then I kind of free from everything.
I've never had it happen, but that kind of leads into my whole point about the inspection or the inspector staying there. It's like, to me, like on the mortgage end, like there are things that come up throughout the process, but like prior to even bringing it up, I'll find the solution and kind of put it in perspective. Cause I mean, this is a stressful situation normally for buyers, you know, like their stress is up. So anything could seem like the end of the world, you know? So if you say $30,000, you know, you just pulled the rug out from under them. So I'm not saying I
want. As long as it's truthful. Truthful is not the right word. So accurate is a better
correct.
Word.
Correct. Yeah. So I mean, if that's the reality of the situation, that's fine. You know, but like, I never want to make something seem bigger than it is. And just state the facts. They can make their decision. But it goes back to what you're saying. If you're not there for them and guiding them through the process, like, okay, painting is not the end of the world. Put it in perspective, then you could get a reaction like that, you know? So, like, you do need a good team guiding you.
Well, what about the opposite way? You know, let's say it's the inspector today. I just heard, well, I got 3 inspections today. It's raining and it's windy. I don't want to go back and revisit the roof, and I don't want to walk on the roofs. And my drone won't fly because it's too windy. So I'm just going to disclaim it and tell them to refer it. Or another guy saying, well, you got an electric panel here. I don't think it's right, so you should get an electrician. And your roofing doesn't seem right, so get a roofer. Get a plumber. Get it. What the heck did you hire me for? You know, does that happen to you guys?
You're grinning. You know, it's like, it's hard for me to be able to properly evaluate whether or not I'm getting good info off of an inspection report, because, you know, they all kind of look the same, right? Everyone's using similar software, you know, like the one I looked at yesterday, where they're promising to buy the house if they, you know, if they missed something, which, you know, Charlie says is a totally rock solid.
Oh no, I can't like that.
throwing him under the bus a little bit, but you know, I did a double take because they use the same software that y'all do, and I was like, oh, is this a Charlie inspection? Well, no, it's not. And then I saw that thing, and I texted you about it, and you were like, that it's a nonsense.
I can't go there now. Let me be clear, all right? First things first. In our company, you know, we don't use the buy your house back guarantee. However, you know, our training school is a training partner with the International Association of Certified Home Inspectors. So I am heavily involved with that organization. All right. And they do offer for home inspectors to include in their inspections, we'll buy your house back. You know, so the inspector does give a small fee for every inspection that they do. But let's say that there's something really bad and you don't want the house anymore. And I think this has only happened like 3 or 4 times in the last 5 or 10 years. But they'll literally buy the house back, and then they'll resell it in order to make some, you know, in order to make the deal work and make it go by there. But I just, you know, to me, it's a lot of money because of the amount of inspections that we do. And I don't know if it's valuable or not. I'd rather give somebody the information up front and let them make a good decision.
Well, if you're, you know, number one, obviously T's and C's apply, right? You got to thread a lot of needles probably to get to the point where they're buying your house back. But
I'm still trying to figure out T's and C's.
Terms and conditions.
Oh, okay. See how smart I am?
Yeah. So, all right. It's only happened 4 or 5 times in the past however many years. And, you know, you're talking about, it's a very low percentage play. So it's like, how much value is that offering if it's, you know, only going to happen, you know, 1 out of every 10,000 inspections? 100, you know, how many inspections get done? How many transactions get done a year? You know, if you've got 100,000 transactions a year, and it happens once on average a year that actually.
Yeah, there's enough money to go ahead and cover all that, and then they make the money back when they sell it anyway. So it's not like it's that much of a deal. I'm not criticizing, but it's just a thought.
I am.
Yeah, I am. All right. Well, I don't want to rely on that. And no. With that being said, you know, we also partnered up with the Chosen Warranties. So we, you know, offer that warranty on every inspection we do. And then I guarantee where we double the amount that comes with it. And I want to give you two a little nod here that Anna Zuniga, she actually just posted up out here. She had that happen to her just recently. So I'm going to assume that's what you were talking about, where the deal got canceled at the 11th hour.
No, that's a different one.
Well, I'm sure it's a different deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just happened to her as well.
Wow. Yeah, well, yeah. And it sucks. I mean, my poor client's moved out of her home. She's really counting on this to happen. She shut her business down. Wow. You know, she was doing, you know, the child care business.
There's a lot of people
home.
Involved.
You know, and the four, there's 5 of us sitting at the closing table anticipating this to happen. The poor closer drove all the way to Alsip from Schaumburg. I drove out there to be with my client. This is one of the rare seller transactions I was present for. I drove all the way out there from the city where I live. I mean, you know, I could go on all day about this one because it really upset me.
Well, it affected a lot of people and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm starting to think a little bit, Joey, that, well, I guess it was just that the deal got canceled is how you knew about what happened. You wanted to find out why it got canceled, right?
Yeah, yeah. I just hate to see a deal get canceled just, you know, on a whim. You know, kind
or
of
by
like,
a mistake.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Or an exaggeration. Yeah. Or ignorance.
I feel like if you have your client's best interest in mind, you know, you're going to give them good advice. You know, so I at least want to see everyone be able to go through all the resources available. You know, get an estimate. If it's repairable, ask for a seller concession. At least look at those. You can always cancel after you look at all your options. But I hate to just kill a deal, you know, without all the options on the table. And I get it, though.
Captain Picard, right there. Captain Picard says, what are the options? And then he chooses the best option, and then he makes sure that that was the right option.
Make it so.
Jean-Luc Picard, Star Trek reference, number 101 right here.
Number one, make it so.
Number one. I love it. So do you never see the home inspection reports, though, do you?
Not officially. So I have a construction background. So
well, that helps.
So I'll give some, like if I personally know the person, I'll give some input, like unofficial. You know, but the lender never sees an inspection report or wants to.
So I was just doing a follow-up, Patrick, and I had an inspection done, and the inspector suggested getting a professional for the roofer and for the plumber. Oh, she's talking about my big beef. Mm. Yeah, I can't stand that. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want people to speak ignorantly. But if you don't know something, tell somebody you don't know, then learn it. You know, the more we know, the more we're worth and the more we help our clients. And for us to walk in there, you know, anyway. I'm sorry, Anna, I'm going to change the subject just because I'm going to get all worked up.
Well, let me just say, you know, from my own perspective, so, and I'm going to speak generally here because, you know, someone's going to bring up an exception here, exception there, and, you know, I don't want to speak in necessarily that much detail, but, you know, as we've talked about, you know, probably every single time we're on here is that you guys do a visual inspection, right? You're not able to see what's inside the walls. You've got some instruments that can detect heat, detect the combustion of the furnace,
moisture,
these kinds of things. So, you know, as technology continues to to get better, you are able to do a more thorough inspection. But there's limits to what you're able to see, and that's at a certain point. If you're talking about a roof, for example. I feel like that's more or less within your sight, right? Anything that can be observed visually, I don't feel like it should necessarily be something where you're then referring it to someone with more expertise. And certainly, if your entire report is basically like, "Well, this looks a little bit off," I think you should get some more expertise to look at it. If you're invoking every single trade in your inspection report, you need to reflect on why it is that you feel you lack enough knowledge or expertise to put yourself out there to say what it is.
We're about halfway through. Patrick, can you give us your contact info?
Yes, I can. Find me on social media. That's where I can be found these days. I get so many calls and text messages that, you know, if it's from a number I don't recognize, it's probably going to get kicked over to my answering service. And you don't want to be there. Nobody wants to be there because everyone hangs up on my answering service. So where I can be found is on social media. Follow me, shoot me a DM, and I'm much more likely to see it because I'm addicted to my phone just as much as everyone else is. Find me on Instagram, Loftus_law. Find me on TikTok, Loftus_law.
You will enjoy the conversations. Joey, can you give us your contact info, please?
Yeah. Probably phone number is the best way to reach me, 708-969-0827. I am on social media, Joey Olson and Neighborhood Loans.
Sounds good. And where do you mostly focus? I know Joey Matthews is mostly on VA mortgages, even though he does everything else, but are you the same?
I kind of have a wide group of people. I deal with a lot of unions, union members, firemen, police, veterans, you know.
That's all our pals, I guess, our family, our friends is what it comes into. So yeah. My name is Charlie Belfontaine. I own Chicagoland Home Inspectors. That website is www.thehomeinspectors. That's plural. It's an ORS and it's a .com. I also own Home Inspection University of Illinois, and that's HIUIL.com. If anybody's interested in joining the home inspection profession, we are not going to teach you to refer business to other professionals, okay? We're going to want you to learn as much as you can about all the different trades. And let me just say that in order to be a licensed electrician in the Chicagoland area, you're talking about 5 years of schooling and on-the-job training. You want to be a licensed plumber in the state of Illinois? Another 5 years of schooling and on-the-job training. HVAC, 4 years. You start adding in the roofers, the framers, the insulators, the drywall guys, cabinet, counter, window, door, garage door, concrete pourers. I could go on and on. There's a lot of education to come into this. And being a home inspector, being a real estate agent too, you're looking at 60 to 80 hours of education. And all you got to do is get 70% on a multiple choice test, and you're a licensed real estate agent or a licensed home inspector. I think it's actually about the same for the mortgage brokers as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it is, in my opinion, way too easy to get into this profession. And Patrick, I get it. You actually have to go to college to become an attorney and pass a bar, you know, which is, I believe the bar, please correct me if I'm wrong. But isn't that like a peer evaluation test? Or is that just an open test that anyone could challenge?
I'm not sure what you mean. You have to have like the proper credentials. You can't just sign up for the bar. This isn't like 1860 where
Abraham Lincoln.
Well, yeah, you know, back in those days, you go to a lawyer's office, you tail them for a couple of years, and now you're a lawyer. We gatekeep this profession.
You should
more than most, not enough probably. there's some, you know, I would draw a line under, you know, a certain amount of competence, and that would drop a lot of lawyers off of the rolls, I suppose. But before I completely ruin my reputation in my own industry, I mean, you know, there's got to be a happy medium, right? I mean, if I'm a real estate broker, the one thing above anything else I hate the most is a bad real estate broker. Because
we deal with a lot of them.
Well, good real estate brokers are worth every penny that they're paid, if not more.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's no two ways about it. And look, if you want to argue that, you know, we don't need real estate brokers, you either know enough about buying and selling homes that you have gained a level of knowledge and competence in that maybe you don't need a real estate broker. If you've bought and flipped 15 homes, you might not need a real estate broker. All right. You might.
You're talking from experience.
Well, listen, I think
most
that
people don't have that experience.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, is that, you know, the people who argue because they've done it and it's so easy, which is their words, not mine.
Hold on. Let me defend those people a little bit. All right. We also know that out of the 75,000 licensed real estate agents in Illinois, there's probably about 1,000, maybe 2,000 that are going to be up there on that level that you're talking about. So many people come and go in this profession that, you know, I might have bought a house with one of the weak ones, and all they did was fill out these blanks on a piece of paper, unlock a door, and really it was nothing. It's like, well, why am I paying you this commission if you're not doing any work? Whereas the people you're talking about, they're going to be there with market analysis. They're going to be talking about how much it's worth. You're nodding your head yes, Joey, because you know that they're going to be able to help them negotiate. They're going to know how much power or leverage that they have. There's a lot of value from somebody who's smart. But then when they're dealing with somebody who's doesn't want to be that smart person, that can harm people too.
Well, I think we're kind of talking two different points here. You're talking about the fact that the bar being set so low allows a lot of people who aren't going to do the work to become, you know, not just licensed. Getting a license is like getting to the starting line.
Yeah,
and
kindergarten.
Then, you know, you need to then put the work in to actually get to understand how to do that job. I mean, you know, we've talked to real estate brokers before, and, you know, I have my real estate broker's license. I don't have to take classes because I'm a lawyer and we write all the rules. But I did have to take the test. And the test is really
just gloating, just so you know.
Oh, I mean, no, I'm just stating the obvious, which is that, you know, every time you look at like a restrictive rule and then there's an exception for lawyers, I mean, there's an obvious reason. It's because, you know, most of the legislators that are writing and passing these laws are also lawyers, and they go, oh yeah, we shouldn't have to do that. We're gonna exempt ourselves. So,
I want to hear from Joey real quick though. Joey, what's your process when you bring on a newly licensed mortgage broker? You just say, okay, have fun?
No, I mean, there's like day-to-day questions from them, you know, for sure. Like,
so just, they have a coach, they have a mentor, they got somebody there looking over their shoulder.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see any other way to do it in this business because there's so many intricacies that, like, they're not necessarily hard questions, but if you don't know where to go to get them, like, you could get stuck for 8 hours. Yeah, but I wanted to touch on the realtor thing.
Please.
You know, there is a large percentage, I believe, like I actually heard like 70% of deals that fall through when someone's not represented by a realtor.
You've been watching the same guy I've been watching.
No, I'm speaking from experience too, is the back end things that go on with the loan, like what I deal with a good realtor, like I'll have earnest money sent to me right away. I'll have all these things done. Like if they're not represented, like it's hard to close a loan on time. You know, because we'll go, like, let's say the seller doesn't have a realtor, and I'll go to the seller direct and request these things. They have no clue what it is. You know, getting a contract's not the hard thing. It's getting it to the closing. You know, so, like, I can see a distinct difference when someone's represented by a realtor or not.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that statistic is one I heard Matt Laracy, who's the top.
Oh yeah, what's it?
the top grossing real estate broker in Chicago in 2023. And you know, I can totally see where he's coming from when he talks about that. And it's funny because
I didn't want to quote the exact number because I'm like, ah, someone's going to be like, no, it's 65.
Yeah, well, who cares? You know, all these numbers are manufactured anyway, you know, but it's, look, setting aside whether or not that number is accurate, you think, especially in a market like we have today, if you are in, if you're trying to bid on a home that is has a lot of competition and you have no representation, you don't have access to the multi-board 7.0 contract form, so you're already behind every single other offer that's being made on that property. You come in with a crumpled piece of paper and you go, you know, written in crayon, I'm gonna get slaughtered for that one. you send an email and you go, I'm offering this amount for a purchase price, and maybe you're even savvy enough to say, you know, and here's 5% for earnest money, and you know, I want to close on this day, and that's it. You've just sent that via email, whereas the other four offers are sent on multi-board with a loan pre-approval with a mortgage broker that has called that listing broker to extol the virtues of their buyer. That unrepresented offer has no chance, because it's just not presented in an attractive way compared to the other four. And you know, maybe in another scenario where you don't have, you know, a lot of multiple offers, maybe you'll have a listing agent who's willing to work with you to kind of coach you up on it, and they go, okay, here's, you know, I've got this, and let me prepare it on the proper form or whatever. Maybe you have a better chance, but then, you know, you have to know to hire a lawyer. You have to know that there's a 5 business day attorney review, inspection. You have to know that all of this matters, that your mortgage contingency deadline matters. What's a mortgage contingency? I have to explain that to just about all my buyers. Mm-hmm. And why? Because this is, they're buying a house. I am the professional. The real estate broker is the professional. You're the professional. We are advisors, and we are guiding someone in a really important thing that they're doing. And unless they are regular buyers and sellers of real estate, they're just not going to know the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And I think the hard part, too, is like when I do my job right, like it should look easy.
It should look
easy.
You know,
but that's the hard part.
It's a great point.
All these things I do on the back end, like my goal is to have, and this is not just like a pitch, like my goal is to have the buyer like not have stress over the loan. Like, I almost want to be an afterthought for the buyer and the realtor. But when that happens, like, man, anyone could write this loan. It's mm-hmm. like, no, I did all these things on the back end, and you just got the finished product. And I feel like sometimes realtors do the same thing. Like, oh, I can do this. All I did was sign a contract.
Yeah, you know, when it's talking about social media and talking to people on this one here, I bite my lip as much as I can. But when we're on the radio, I'm figured, okay, it's free time. Let Charlie loose.
There's no comment section on this.
Oh, hell no. I'm all over it.
Oh, the complaints are dinging in.
But like, just for example, I just hit a potential home inspector trying to get licensed in Illinois. He took the home inspection test twice and failed it, right? And I take all our videos and I post them up on our website. Free access to it. Pretty easy to find. I got a self-assessment test on there. If somebody really wants to enter the business, I will help them enter the business. All right? And just the more you know, the more you're worth is my philosophy on everything that comes in there. But he didn't want to do that. You know, he comes back and he's like, I failed it twice. Can you give me some tips on how to pass it? And I'm like, yeah. And I felt like a smart aleck, all right? It's like, yeah, learn the material. Plain and simple. You know, there. If you're not passing it, it's going to be there. And let me confess this, all right? Back in 1993, I took this test for the very, very first time, and I failed it, all right? I was a framer. I was a concrete guy. I didn't know anything about plumbing and electric and everything else.
No, but you thought you did.
But I thought I did because I was at that age where I knew everything, yeah. All right?
I've been on the job site long enough. I know what these – Boom. Listen, I've worked on so many job sites with so many, you know, plumbers, electricians, HVAC guys, all the trades. And, you know, you look around and you go, I mean, shoot, this guy has only been out of jail 8 months and he's, you know, a licensed carpenter. I reckon I could learn this pretty quick. Hey, you know, before he spent that 2 year stint in jail, he, you know, did 10 years on the job site. So, you know, those guys know a lot more than you think. They may seem dopey, and some of them are kind of dopey, but, you know, they know their stuff.
There's a lot of experience there. But with that being said, when we were licensed in 2002, everybody was required to take that same test again. And so I had to do it. And it took 40 minutes. And yeah, I am bragging a little bit. And it was the easiest test I've ever taken, and that's the way it should be. All right, why are we allowing, you know, 70% of a multiple choice to help somebody buy a house in these days? Because that's the going rate of average, I guess, C, you know, that comes in there. But to me, you know, the people are spending every penny they got buying these things, and I think the more knowledge we have, the better off everything is. And Joey, you kind of mentioned a little bit about, yeah, great, you got your license. That's kindergarten. I think maybe you mentioned it, yeah, too. That's kindergarten.
You just got to the starting line. If let me just give, you know, anyone who's...
I'm getting worked up, aren't I?
I know. You're getting a little color in your face. Look, anyone who is, you know, taking an important exam, let me just give you probably the simplest advice I can if you're trying to pass that exam. Take as many... do as many practice questions as you possibly can. Yeah. All right. All of the old tests are usually available. Do as many, because there's only so many things they can ask you in so many different ways. And I know it can be frustrating because, you know, you take a practice exam and you get 50% and you go, oh man, it's never going to happen for me. You've just gone through, you know, 100 questions and you now know the ones you missed, you know the answer to that now. And if you do 5, 10 of those practice exams, you've probably covered just about every question they can ask. And now you're going to walk in and you're going to see that question again and you're going to go, I already know what the answer is here.
Right. And but take it to one step further. Know the subject matter. Don't just learn what the right answer is, you know, but you want to understand why it's the right answer.
Yeah. Not arguing that point. The whole thing about a test is all it really is testing is your test taking ability. You know, having the knowledge, like the bar exam, you learn all the stuff, but then the way they ask the questions is like a total, can't say that word. It's meant to steer you, I really want to say that word. It's meant to trick
what
you.
What word is it?
It's a swear word.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's meant.
We got to get the old beeper beeping.
Yeah,
here.
They're trick questions. And I feel like a lot of exams are written that way. They're written more in a way to test your test taking skills. So definitely know the material. You're not going to be able to kind of take that final leap from knowing the material to being able to pass the exam unless you know how they're going to ask you those questions, is, I suppose, the point. So my advice is predicated on the idea that you've already taken the time to learn the material.
One of my favorite questions for home inspectors is you drive up on the house, you knock on the door, you notice all the houses are semi-custom homes made by the same builder in the subdivision. You see everybody else has asphalt shingles on their roof, but the house you have has slate shingles. The owner is still there. They tell you, oh, yeah, we had the asphalt shingles removed and we put the slate roof up in here. And then they leave it at that. And the question is, what do you tell your client? You know, so I'm curious on what you two with construction backgrounds would tell your client with something like that.
That one's easy. You should consult with a licensed roofer.
Oh, my God. I want to.
How to.
Weather. I need to pull something at you. Oh, jeez.
There goes the flag.
Yeah. No, it's like, you know, trusses when they're built. Heavy, you know, Hawk Home Inspection says, you know, but it's when trusses, if it's a house and it has a truss roof, they're only, you got to know what the snow loads are. You have to know what the weight of the roofing material is, and then the span of the trusses are going to be there. And they're all designed for that. So if that truss was designed for asphalt shingles and you remove those and you put on a slate or a clay tile roof, asphalt shingles are 300 pounds for every 100 square feet. Whereas you're looking at 1,000 pounds for slate or clay tile for every 100 square feet that comes in there.
It makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference, and it just wasn't designed for that. Then you add on a snow load.
So what are you going to advise them? I'm kind of curious.
I am going to go inside, first of all, look at the trusses and see if there's any signs of bending, twisting, and turning. And then I'm going to ask them if they have the drawings for the, or request that my client get their drawings for the trusses, and then most likely they're going to be getting a structural engineer.
Okay. That's
so you put that kind of heavy weight on that roof and there's going to be twisting. Now, maybe they beefed it up. All right. Maybe they got, when they originally got it, the weight load of the trusses, and that'll be written on the plans. And if you could have that stuff, that's great. All right. But I pretty positive if the asphalt shingles were there originally, that's what those trusses were designed for. And unless somebody got an architect or an SE or a PE out there to go ahead and beef up those trusses, it just wasn't done. So.
And they probably won't have the plans because unless the builder bought the plans from the architect and owns that intellectual property, it will be the architect's intellectual property, and they will not let it out of the office unless you pay money.
Or unless it's my wife who saves everything, which I think is the only person on this planet that saves everything. But she'll have them, but I don't know if anybody else will. Normal people won't.
If you bought them from the architect, you would have them. But if you didn't actually buy them from the architect, then they're not your plans, and you don't get to own them.
But that's part of what the questions that they run into. So you got to have the knowledge, and then you have to be able to FSO, figure stuff out. Yes, you're giggling.
Well done.
I do what I can. Anyway, so that's enough of my beef and malarkey that comes on all this stuff in here. I do want to chat a little bit more on, I just had a phone call recently, and I'd like to get your two cents on this. So I was doing a Zoom call. We were talking about prices and problems with issues, and it was more so, the biggest thing was a chimney, right? So it was a wood-burning fireplace, and I've been involved with enough of these things catching on fire, so I'm pretty prejudiced to wood-burning fireplaces. I'm not going to lie on that one. They had gaps and cracks in the flues. We sent a camera up there and were able to document that. The smoke chamber wasn't parged, and there were cracks in the firebox. You're looking at 10 grand to get that thing if you're going to use it for wood burning. And then if you want to convert it over to an actual gas, you know, then you're looking at about 6,000 in order to do something like that. They made the comment, and I need a little advice here from you, Patrick. They made a comment, well, we're going to call our attorney now and see what they say about negotiating on this stuff. I mean, what if you were the attorney and they're asking you that stuff? What are you doing?
I mean, look, we can ask for anything, and hopefully the seller will consider it, and they may or may not. You know, so number one, establishing, so this is the full extent of the cost of the problem if you end up being the one who's going to be footing the bill for it and not the seller. So you certainly want to set that expectation up front. But as far as, you know, what can we negotiate? I mean, my next phone call after hearing about all of that is to the real estate broker, and I want to find out about the negotiations and, you know, were there four other offers? You know, how did we end up winning? How did we end up as the winning bid? You know, do you think we have a lot of room to negotiate? Also, is it something, now that it's out in the open, is it something that the seller really should consider addressing? You know, when you talked earlier about foundation issues, once that's out there, a seller has to consider the fact that even if they say, you know, go pound sand to this buyer, the next buyer, in all likelihood, is going to find the same thing.
Maybe not. That's not true. There's a lot of dingbat inspectors out there.
I suppose, but my strategy is not going to be, let's hope the next person hires a dingbat, right? Because what kind of strategy is hope? Hope is not a strategy. Hope is just, let's hope for the best. You don't need anyone. There's no discussions necessary if we're just, you know, keeping our fingers crossed.
I do want to make a point that you said here that I want to drive this home. All right. I asked Patrick, the attorney, the real estate attorney professional, that's all he does is real estate law. I asked him that same question. What did he do? He goes, well, and I'm using different words, I really don't know how much leverage my client has. I don't know how much power they have. But you know who does know, or who should know, is that real estate broker. So I'm going to reach out to them, and I'm going to find out, what can we do? What advice? How much power does my client have? Because if they don't have any power, you know, and in today's market, a lot of clients don't, you know, then it's take it or leave it.
And when you're making any decision, right, you want to, I think, you know, they say you want to get at least like 60% of the information, you know, in order to make a decision, because getting 100% is probably darn near impossible, and getting to about 60% of the available information is pretty efficient in terms of the amount of time it takes. Getting from 60 to like 80 or 90 takes a lot longer, and then, you know, I don't know that you can ever get to 100 in most circumstances. But I don't want to be trying to make a decision with 20% of the information.
Boom.
I can get from, you know, I know what I think, but also I need more information and I know exactly where to get it. And so talk to the real estate broker and, you know, depending on how capable and, you know, confident they are, competent, however you want to describe it, I'll get some really good information. You know, I may not ask for anything, even though in another circumstance, if it was 2017, I might handle it differently. That's just how it is.
Does the same thing happen with you, Joey? And by the way, I know I love asking these open questions when we only had three minutes left.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's similar, but just on different topics. You know, like the majority of my interactions is with a realtor on both sides. Like I try and keep the listing agent in the loop. And
everybody needs to work together.
Yeah, and it just helps the transaction move. But if I have questions, I do typically, I'll start with the realtor because they have a good overall picture of what's going on.
You know, even with the client the longest.
Yep.
They have built their relationship. If they did their job.
Well, and it goes back to me giving sound advice. Like, I'm not going to call the buyer without some kind of resolution for them already. You know, at least some advice. I'm not going to just dump a problem on them and then have them scramble to try and figure it out, you know, so.
There's this, right there. Those are other words from a true professional that, thank you. That's all I could do is just say thank you. Joey, if you don't mind, give us your contact information.
Joey Olson, 708-969-0827. And it's jolson@neighborhoodloans.com.
And then, If somebody goes to thevaloannerd.com, do they also find you there?
That's going to be Joey Matthews.
But he is the other Joey?
Yep.
The ugly Joey.
Yeah, he's the VA loan
nerd. We can trash talk him here. He's not here to defend
himself. He's a guru on VA loans, for sure. So VA loan nerd, you'll find Joey Matthews. We're the frontline team.
Yeah, you guys all work together.
Yeah, yep.
Which is nice. And how big is that team?
About six or seven right now.
Six or seven right now. But I know you guys keep everybody busy on the phones, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Especially this time of year. Patrick, can you give us your contact?
I heard that Joey Matthews is like 7'2" and can pound beers like Andre the Giant. So, that's what I've heard about the VA loan nerd.
Oh, I have some stories if you want me to add them. No,
please do. Instead of me giving my contact information, no, never mind. Find me on social media. That's my thing these days. On Instagram, Loftus_law. On TikTok, LoftusLaw.
No, I appreciate that. And my name is Charlie Belfontaine. I want to thank everybody for listening to WCPT AM 820. Devin Tingle's the producer of the show. He's the one who makes everything work. My business is Chicagoland Home Inspectors, and that website is www.thehomeinspectors.com. If you do have any questions, whether you're looking or buying or whatever, you just want to have, you know, somebody in your back pocket to send pictures to, questions, radon numbers, whatever it is. We do everything that we can to give as much information at a time.
I don't think he fits
before anything starts. I have no idea why he's making fun of me over here. The school is Home Inspection University. That's HIUIL.com. The Home Inspection University of Illinois. And again, if you're interested in joining the home inspection profession, please give us a call. Also, if you're a small business and you want to join our BNI, please give us a call again. My name is Charlie, and I am out.